The WarHQ.co.uk proudly sponsors the War Room podcast. And to show our appreciation to all you listeners out there, we'd like to give you a coupon code for £10 off and free post and package when you make an order at thewarhq.co.uk. The coupon code is POD21, that's POD21. Apply this to your basket at the end of your shop to get £10 off and free postage and package. Now, on with the show. Hello, everybody. It's Paul here at the War Room. And on Monday's edition of the podcast, we are going to talk about our recent trip down to Blyth for the Guns Over the River Blyth competition, doubles competition, down there in the UK, and an excellent competition it was. So keep listening to the podcast, because at the end we have a little bit of a banter chat and waffle, if you like, about the competition and some other thoughts as we were coming back in the car. So bear in mind the sound quality on that is not perfect, but hopefully you'll still find it enjoyable. So, you get the chat from Blyth. What else have we got on? Well, we're getting ready for Las Vegas Open in Las Vegas, obviously. We're going to take the Dutch out there again. The Dutch did well at Blyth. We won first two games and played the eventual winners in our third game. We held our ground very well, I thought. All things considered, any of you who know the Dutch out there, it can be a trying time playing them. And our final game, we kind of ran out of time. The 2 hours 15 time allowed for the last game was shortened down to about 1 hour 35. You can go and watch the video that will come up on YouTube very shortly if you want to have a look at it. Bear in mind, the videos on YouTube for the competition are just setting up the video and letting it roll, so no commentary or anything, but you'll get a rough idea and pick it up. I do have plans to do those competition videos slightly differently, but it meant that we only really got four turns on and we were really rushing the last turn. Where I was playing with Brian, who was playing French, 600 point French list, with two large squads of cavalry. And we normally, for that competition, we were outflanking them turn 4 or 5. So our hand was forced at the last minute. And we kind of sprung our trap earlier than we would have wished. So we ended up losing to Alistair and Ant from Scotland. So well done to them. But I was very pleased with how the Dutch performed. Those of you who are following the fortunes of the Dutch Army. So now we just need to bolster them up a little bit to go to Las Vegas Open. I'll be running a very similar list to the list that we had down at Blyth, but because of dice restrictions LVO, I'm having to bump up the inexperienced infantry to regular infantry, just to try and bulk out the points a little bit. So I won't be getting my free inexperienced unit. Instead, I'm going to have to pay for it as a regular unit, which bumps up the points by 100 or so. And I'm also adding in a smaller fifth squad of 7 troops, but this time they won't have the light machine gun. We're also taking the iconic Landsberg armoured car to bump up the points yet again. We will also be taking the mighty Dutch tank platoons. For those that don't know, it's a Carden Lloyd tankette, open top, 1 MMG. If you know any of the vehicles in Bolt Action, it's very similar to a universal carrier that's been on a strict no food diet for a year. It's about a third of the size of a universal carrier, but looks very similar, and they can just manage to cram two guys in it, almost like the cute little Belgian tankette you get, or the Polish tankette you get, although that one's close top. How unfair. So we'll be taking that. It bumps us up to 14 dice for the Las Vegas Open. As I've mentioned before, I think the 14 dice cap will mean that we see more veteran troops at Las Vegas Open, possibly with a big tank. I know Harrison, who's coming with me, playing his rather confusing pre-war Austrian army using Axis rules, but playing as Allied. He's having the same trouble, and he's having to, like myself, untheme his list, which seems a little bit of odds because the Las Vegas Open is actually giving points for theme. We'll see how that works out. Harrison on the way back of the car, as you will hear in the car conversation at the end of this podcast, is considering taking Mousies, King Tigers, and all sorts of things to bump up these points. So we'll see how that works out. But we'll be bringing you coverage of the Dutch Army and their adventures from Las Vegas, and we'll be meeting up with some old friends of the War Room show. So we'll be meeting with Alan Rockwell from GC Minis. Hopefully we'll be getting a little fun game which we will edit and let you share the excitement and the banter. We'll also be meeting John Russell from Warlord USA, and we'll have a little chat with him and see what secrets we can get him to spill, like we did last year at Las Vegas Open. We know John hates to have a talk. He's very good on camera, if any of you haven't seen him. So that'll be something to look forward to. Las Vegas Open is 3 days. There is a show and vendors there, but it's quite a big 40k tournament, and the Bolt Action guys have sneaked on a few tables there. I think it's going to be bigger than last year by the sounds of it, but we won't know until we get there. There was only about 12 of us last year or so. I managed to come second at last year's Las Vegas Open. I would be highly surprised if I come second this year with the red hot and Dutch Army, but who knows, we shall see. So we'll be talking tactics in another podcast with the Dutch. I'm starting to learn my way about them. But more things than that happen in Bolt Action. There's one of the things that's drawn to me was a post by Carl Owen back at the start of January. He has a YouTube video which I've only just discovered, so my apologies for that, Carl. But he's got a combat patrol Bolt Action skirmish discussion, some rules it looks like he's made up using the core rules from Bolt Action and just sort of an add-on rule set to allow you to play smaller skirmish games. So I'm going to be having a look at that video and discussing that. Some of you may or may not. I'm involved in a very small capacity with something similar which Warlord may or may not be working on. We mentioned it last year at the Las Vegas Open that Warlord were working on a smaller skirmish style game. So this is going to be interesting, but I point you towards that. It'd be interesting to see what comments you have about Carl's video and see if maybe we can't get involved with Carl and see what we can do there. What else cropped up that I hadn't noticed? Well, Cambridge Too Far, of course, will be coming up shortly after Las Vegas Open. Cambridge Too Far, surprisingly, held in Cambridge in the UK. Currently, I believe, is still the largest Bolt Action competition in the world. We've got spaces for 100 people at it this year. It's all the tickets have been bought, so it'll only be less than that if some people don't show up. And I know that Steve Tibbs at Cambridge Too Far, pretty sure he could have probably sold about 150 plus tickets if he had the space. And I know the team down there are working hard to make the event larger each year, and they do a great job. But he posted that after the GT he'd had, well, I'm assuming it's after the GT, how he put it was that Several players had commented after another recent event, so we're reading in that it's the GT there. We're asking what sort of competition they could expect at Cambridge. And what they're looking for is a more friendly, fun day out. Looking, as Steve says, you'd be looking to meet 99-plus like-minded players and have three enjoyable games and see a great mix of armies. He knows that we are awesome enough to self-police. If only that was the truth, Steve. I think that was said slightly tongue-in-cheek. And that it's not nationals and it's not a competitive competition or highly competitive competition. And he's not really looking to see overpowered lists there. And his guidelines for that, I'll quote from his email clarification that he put out, is that for the most part you guys are often awesome enough to self-police, and you know that what whack is. If you're unsure, here are some examples, although not limited to. So he's giving you some ideas of what he thinks is overpowered, and that would be twin platoon with minimal compulsory units, so taking inexperienced officers, inexperienced two troops, so you can get access to double hitting big units like howitzers and heavy mortars, etc. No more than two flamethrowers, more than two multiple launchers, multiple quad gas trucks, and lists with 20 dice or over at 1,000 points. I'm guessing what he normally does, I don't know if Steve sends back lists, but he might send back the list to be redone to take into account the type of event he's trying to organise. But last year he put all the lists that were min-maxed together in the first round, so at least half of them were biting the dust. And he's just saying that it's getting harder for tournament organisers to organise competitions, especially now that there's an awful lot of supplements being released. And those supplements, he says that they're poor quality. I think it's that supplement books are really designed towards campaign play rather than tournament play. And I would say the books are actually very well written, but maybe tournament organisers, and this is not a dig at Steve in the slightest at all, being a tournament organiser myself, I fall into this trap. I think the tournament organisers have a bigger responsibility, as Steve has attempted to do here, so hats off to him. They need to make it clear what is expected at their competitions, and they need to make it clear if certain lists from certain campaign books or certain army lists from certain campaign books are not welcome at their competition. Just so that people know the kind of atmosphere, the kind of play they might expect. And of course, there's plenty of room, as you all know me very well, for lists which are min-maxed, and we go up against each other and try to outfox, outwit each other and know the rules inside out. There's plenty of that, and indeed I'm starting to organise the British Bowl Action League this year, the first game of which is at Warlord HQ with their blessing on March the 16th, I think it is. Go and check on the Warlord website. The guys at Warlord HQ are selling the tickets down there, early bird tickets for £15. So if you like that kind of tournament and you really want to pit wits against some of the best players in the country who are all out to beat you, but in a most gentlemanly and kind way, even some of the top players, I won't embarrass them by name, but they will sit down and help players which don't have as much experience, even when they're playing in these cut and thrust tournaments. Bolt Action, as I've often said before and will often say again, I'm quite sure, one of the friendliest games around and fantastic for beginners to get into. Just go along to a competition. I know it can be frightening at first, but once you've thrown the first load of dice, got to know the guy you're playing, you will find that they will be very friendly, help you along, help you with the rules, help to explain things, and make sure pretty much that you have one of the best days out you've had for a long time. So I'd encourage everybody just to pick up, go to your local tournaments, come to the British Bolt Action League, where there will be serious players, but fun lists are invited. Just be aware you'll be playing competitive players who will teach you an awful lot about the game and how to play it and how to have fun. So yeah, that was a little bit. I think there's a lot of development in the tournament scene for Bolt Action. Not sure Bolt Action was ever envisaged at its conception to be a competitive game, but it's turned out that way simply because, in spite of some of the criticisms that we have about the wonderful rule set, it seems to be one of the most balanced rule sets around and a very easy game to get into. So, less wittering. I've been going on for about 15 minutes. I think we have about 30 or 40 minutes of car journey waffle to add on to that, and that's well longer than any podcast I want to inflict on you people. Listen on to the end. Remember, we'll repeat the code for thewarhq.co.uk at the end, and once you finish listening to it, please comment, like, all the usual stuff on whichever medium you are listening to this on, and then pay a visit to the War HQ and use that discount code to get a fantastic little bargain and some more goodies for your army. Take care, guys, and on with the next part of the show. Hello everybody, it's the War HQ with the podcast in the war room, and we're in the car travelling back from Blythe, where the Scots lads have managed to do a pretty reasonable job today. And who have we got? We've got Brian, yay! We've got Graham,
yay!
Boo! And we've got Harrison,
yay!
So how did we get all... I'm obviously drunk. How did we all get on at Blythe today, lads?
Absolutely fantastic event. Three really good games and really good outcomes for the Scottish lads going down. And what can I say about the food? The food was fantastic as well. Awesome event.
And Graham, how did you do, Graham?
Did really well. First and last games were very good, went very well. Unfortunately, not for the opponents. Game 2 was a very brutal draw. Yeah, quite happy with how the list played out, and probably won't run it again in that format.
What about you, Harrison? Did you
I had a great time. It was probably one of the best competitions I've been to. I don't know why, I just had a great time. Great food. All the people I met were lovely.
Yeah, it was chilly, wasn't it?
It was a bit cold. Oh, the chilly. Yeah. I thought you were saying it was cold. I was like, I wasn't that cold.
No, there was chilly con carne. Sorry.
Yeah, that was quite good. I just had a great time. But something I thought interesting that might spark a conversation is the scenarios. So the scenarios weren't from the book, I don't think.
Two of them were from the book.
Were they?
Yeah. So we did. What scenarios did we do? We did.
Kill each other.
Key positions, no man's land, and what was the cross one?
Crossfire was the other one. The crossfire was from the Australian guys, I think. The Bolt Action Alliance or whatever it was. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, it was from the Australian guys. So, what was the points you thought about from the scenarios today?
First of all, they're all right. The Dawn thing kind of pissed me off a bit, just because I wasn't used to it.
Yeah.
I thought, well, it's you're basically wasting a turn. It's just the same idea.
Oh, that's right. Because we had what was it?
It was basically a night fight.
It was night fighting. So there's 24-inch visibility.
I didn't do this in the game. I thought I may as well just stay off the board and walk everything on, so I don't take the artillery hit. Which is what I should have done.
I thought, what a waste of time actually deploying.
Well, there you go. As you're talking about it, the first thing Graham witnessed was that. So, everyone's opponents obviously never read that part, but yeah, first turn of the last game is 24 inch range.
That was the trio we were playing, and both are friendly observers. Yeah.
But yeah, the point was, I was also reading the. What's it called? has specific map layouts for competitions. Hmm. And I thought, do you think that's something Warlord should say, alright, if you're playing competitions, this should be the map layout?
Your thing with that is you're forcing every single tournament to have absolutely piles of terrain to go to compensate for that.
I just thought that was an interesting thing.
Would it be samey though? Would the games become samey? I was like, okay, we know we're playing that scenario, we know what it's going to be for a layout.
Because you can practice on that layout.
Yeah, every game would just become, right, I know what I'm going to do. So it takes away the spur of the moment sort of choices.
Yeah.
Well, that's my opinion.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
But the counter argument, just for the sake of entertainment, would be you're always in a level playing field.
But you'd also know the distance from that corner to that corner, from that field to that forest. You know your ranges, you never have to worry about
getting it. Because 40k, you can pre-measure everything.
Yeah,
right.
They've got the ETC format in 40k, they have set tables. And that's what the tables will be when you play them. And it's, so the folk, they will know all the tables and know exactly where they can be, where to be out of range, where to be in range. So if you start doing that format,
I don't think that's as exciting to play by the sounds of it.
I don't think it is, but then most of the 40k armies tend to be first to second turn kills if they can, which makes it even less.
It kind of reminds me of, like, you ever play Halo and then you remember where all the really good weapons are on the map? So you'd always rush to that one place to get, like, the rocket launcher or whatever. That's kind of what it made me think of, just learning maps.
That's basically what everybody would be doing. They would learn the maps, know exactly where to go, where not to go, and a newbie would come along and just get
smashed. So what about the tables? There was a mixture of tables. Most of them were what we would consider bare, but they weren't really.
No.
But compared to what we normally play on, because we normally play with loads of terrain, so they were, because we had guns, in theory they were more in our favour.
When I played against, the one we played against Alistair on was absolutely horrible. Because I was basically hiding from his guns and getting close.
Ugh. Well, Alistair and Dan took heavy howitzers, didn't they?
Yeah, two heavy howitzers and two medium howitzers.
So, and then they had like two couple mortars and stuff as well.
I'm starting to wonder if paying the points for heavy and medium mortars is sometimes worth it. When we were coming down the car, we were talking about it. Quite often your mortars are honing in on other artillery in small teams.
Yeah.
And like 3-inch mortars is a bit like overkill for the points.
Do you not feel that sometimes you have to take mortars or artillery as counter mortar artillery?
Well, yeah. But if you're taking them as counters, why take heavy?
Yeah.
Can you move and shoot like a 2-inch mortar, like a light mortar?
Light mortar, you can.
Oh, I might give that a go. Might give that a bash.
Can't fire smoke off them. That's one thing that.
Can you not smear folk off a light mortar?
Off a light mortar,
No. See, that's something else we could have done. We could have fired smoke. I always forget about smoke.
That was my other idea for taking on.
Have you read the rules for smoke?
Yeah, they're not brilliant because they're not very accurate, but still, it's always a.
But if you got a big gun.
If you don't roll a 6 on the first step, your opponent can then decide where they place the smoke.
Yeah.
So it's.
Well, within 12 inches, isn't
it? That was one thing.
The thing is, if you've got a heavy howitzer, you've got a. Is that a 6-inch template?
Yeah.
But you fire it at the edge of a board, so it can only drift a very short distance.
Yeah. Your other thing is as well, it's a really good way, if you do get it off, is to nullify Tiger Fear if you can drop it on it.
Yeah.
Nothing can see it.
It's worth considering that, because as I say, if you fire at the side of the table, you can only drift 6 inches, and you're not allowed to not touch. You're not allowed the smoke to be off the table, so you know you're going to come in on that side of the table and block the side. Follow me?
Yeah.
Smoke's interesting. Do you use it to block someone's line of sight or do you use it to cover yourself?
It depends, doesn't it? You can do it either way, I guess. I'm actually now starting to think about it. I'm going to check that for the smoke, but to me it makes sense to fire smoke at the side of the table if it's in your.
Yeah.
might be a valid and useful tactic. I think firing smoke, just generally, unless you've got a unit that can move to make use of the cover wherever the smoke goes.
Brian, did you ever feel hampered by your FT-17s, like the restrictions, or did it turn out okay?
I think they worked all right. There was a couple of times where it was like, bollocks, fail the test, so, and then they were reversing.
So we're talking about FT-17s that have the one-man turret rule, so you've got to roll if you want to advance and fire.
Yeah.
Do a morale check if you want to advance and fire.
So I was running veterans, so you're talking leadership 10 anyway. But there was a couple of situations where I'd like to have advanced forward and fire, but I ended up falling back.
Yeah, you did. You wasn't an awful lot you failed, but you failed more than you normally did.
Yeah, four over the course of the year, maybe. But again, it stopped tomorrow, so it didn't anyway, because it was moving one way or another. Because they did draw a bit of fire over the day. And considering the wee 42-point tanks aren't really worth much. The fact that folk are shooting at them, they weren't shooting at something else, so... Yeah, I was quite happy how they turned out. It's probably going to drop into my cupboard for a wee while when I get my Russians back out. Yeah. Get some games in with them, but... I really enjoyed playing the French today.
Dutch did alright.
They did.
They weren't as strong as yours. Basically, they just held off the pack until the last minute.
Right, stood in there, took the bullets for me.
Took the bullets, yeah. Yeah, I was surprised in that last turn, that still caught me, because I thought we were coming in the other side, even though I'd written it down. Thought I was out flanking the other way.
Going to have to get you a pair of Jiminy Cricket wellies for left and
right. I know, that's terrible.
For the young folk like Harris, can you look at the Jiminy Cricket this?
Was it Pinocchio or something?
No, it's
one of these cartoons.
Jimmy Cricket wasn't Pinocchio.
Jimmy Cricket, I'm thinking about, he was a comedian and he used to wear wellies.
That's right.
One on the right and the other, and a wee baller hat type thing. Wasn't funny, like, but.
So, full action at the moment. How do we see it going? We're into the new year.
Quite a few events this year. I'm quite excited to be going to events that I've not been to before. I was excited by today as well, because I'm not playing the doubles tournament. And it was a total new format for me. Really enjoyed it. Would I have another doubles tournament? Would I maybe think of organising one for Dwarf? Yes, I might.
I think I really enjoyed the doubles idea. Because you got someone to chat with and discuss the ideas with.
Your only issue with that is time constraints. Because you end up chatting, what we're doing, your time's ticking down. But if you could organise an event and you were setting 2.5 hours per game or something,
maybe if you had like two games in the event,
then you're not really getting a decent result at the end. That's fine if you're maybe doing a campaign.
I think especially for if you're going to team events like that, using scenarios that everybody knows is a help.
Yeah.
Because it stops that discussion beforehand that you get with what's the scenario, I haven't seen it, read it through.
Another argument to that though is we've all had the scenarios for long enough. So.
Well, that's very true, but.
I mean, so it's just. I mean, we practiced the crossfire a couple of times.
But having said that, not everybody's getting a game every week.
That's true.
You know, some folk are lucky if they're getting a game once a month. So, Bolt Action seems to be becoming busier events wise. Madison, you're off abroad very shortly.
Yeah, I'm going to Las Vegas. I'm excited for that, but I'm a bit. I don't know. I've not been updated if they're still in the 14 dice limit.
Still on the 14 dice limit.
So my Austrians are going to have a King Tiger. Sorry, I'm losing all my theme points now. But what else am I going to do, really? I'm not going to make all those points up.
How big is your army at the moment?
A lot more than 14 dice, my 1250 Austrian army.
Oh, right, sorry, 1250, yeah.
So, I'm going to need to reduce some units and just put in like a tiger or something, I think. And I've got. What?
Oh, I'd love to paint a green tiger.
My hands are kind of tied at a minute.
Would you like to borrow a Hollywood tiger?
I need it to be high points.
No, he's trying to spend points. Yeah. No,
because I get the free. It's not a free German unit, but you know what I mean. We get like a lend lease, not even that. I could get like an Oppo German unit to come down. And I'm thinking, I could Howling Cow's too cheap.
Well, too cheap.
Is there like a a vehicle mounted naval warfare. Is that a thing? Stuk as a foos.
Or you could go there with a hunter warfare.
How much is a Stuk as a foos? So it might not be enough points, mate.
Yeah, so that's only about 120-530 points. Is it?
Yeah. See, I don't know how many points I'm going to need to bring it down by to make.
Well, that was the thing I found as well. For a 1250 point tournament, having a 14 dice limit and playing Dutch, I had to untheme and make everything regular. And I was like, I didn't really like doing it, to be honest, but what else can you do?
Because all you're going to get is your veterans.
I think I'm still 10 points short.
You think you'll see a lot of SS assault rifles, do you think?
I think we're going to see a lot of veterans at it, and we're probably going to see quite a few tanks, which could be a bit problematic for the good old
King Tiger boys. There we go.
I was thinking for the French, like, probably not a problem for the King Tiger, but...
Yeah.
You mean the Dutch?
Dutch, sorry, yeah, Dutch, I meant.
It's because they pretend to be French.
It's been a long day.
Tell you what else can I take from the Germans, which is quite good.
Panzer IV.
That's too cheap. Oh, come on, take a Panzer IV just to annoy them.
Well, I'm going to have to.
Well, they're not going to take any experienced troops, so... Well, again, I'm going to lose all my theme points. Because everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, you got a really nice
army.
Well, that's
the other thing, they haven't told us how they're theming the armies, because they said there's going to be theme points, but they haven't told us what the theme is.
I'm like, hey, it's themed, but you bastards are making me untheme it.
Well, that's right, so... Somebody that's playing... sort of an assault rifle German list... is going to be more themed than my list that I've had to untheme. It's like, that's a bit weird.
So how many King Tiger? How many King Tigers do you see?
You don't see an awful lot
of King Tigers. How much is a mouse?
Oh, mouse. I think there's about 800 points a mouse.
Oh, no, I'm not going to get a mouse.
You've got to transport it to Las Vegas as well, mate.
Don't think a Storm Tiger.
Oh, is that the one with the big, like...
The heavy
howitzer. The 5-inch howitzer.
The big trunk to cannon.
Yes.
Do they...
Take a Panther. Panthers are pretty good choice. Okay, it's probably not... Well, it's about 250 points or 300 points a Panther.
300 points,
right?
You know, I think.
Do you have buzzsaw on it? Is there any machine gun tanks? Are there, like, machine gun tanks in the middle?
Well, yeah, all the German tanks are buzzsaw.
I've just loaded up Easy Army.
Here we go.
Stuk as a foos at veteran is 156.
I think that'll be too cheap. I'm looking at like 200-300 points is what I'm thinking. I don't know how much a King Tiger is, probably about 500.
A King Tiger you're looking at about 500 points.
Oh, surprise, busy got the easy army out here where we try and cheese Harrison's list up.
Can
for
you get
LVO?
A Tiger for 300?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll get a Tiger tank then. It's not quite a King Tiger, but you don't see many Tiger tanks going about either. Remember Andrew took one, a low fuel one.
He did.
That was cool.
That constantly ran out of fuel.
Didn't change much because his gun could hit.
I played against a King Tiger that came on and ran out of fuel first time behind a hill. I couldn't shoot anything. Poor guy was stuck behind the hill.
Oh, but I like to do, I don't win, but I like to do the army of like Panther turrets.
A regular mouse is 580.
Ooh!
A veteran 696.
500 points, that's... You're actually thinking about that, aren't you, Harrison?
Yeah, I think...
And it's like a huge piece of scenery to hide the rest of your army behind.
Does anyone make mouse models?
Yeah. Warlord do for a start. Yeah.
Really? Who buys them? Apart from people like me, you need the points. Who ever buys a mouse? I don't... Some people buy tigers, like, all the time.
I would always buy it for you, just because I want to see it on the part.
I want one as well, Paul.
No, I don't want one.
Go on, do it.
It's like a mouse, just to... Or like, oh, here's my really lovely themed Austrians and a mouse. Fuck your 14, but your dice limit.
But you still have 14 dice with a mouse?
Yeah.
Of course. Well, actually, to be honest, I could probably get the Dutch army at 14 dice and a mouse.
I probably mean less painting as well. Right. I want the CV-35s though. That favourite tank of World War II. Maybe not the best, but definitely my favourite. So tiny.
There was no painting competition today. Boo!
Yeah, there was, anyway.
There were some nice armies. Alistair had a lovely army, hadn't
it? Oh, I bet.
Does he do a new one every time, or is he?
No, he doesn't. He's been he's been adding on.
That is a new one, isn't it?
No,
has it just been adding on?
He did a post, I think it was a Boat Action Scotland recently, or Painting Scotland, a Boat Action. And he'd been adding extra support units to his army. So that's the sort of support units that he...
That was asked of the captain of Scotland. So what else is going in on Boat Action that's interesting is Brian looks at the Sturm Tag. How's that?
Well, that's the fuel shortage one.
How many?
And that's 432.
Oh, I could do that.
Sturm Tigers are pretty cool as well.
But we could always just look for
Armour 11.
480, and that's not got the fuel shortage.
Oh baby.
Armour 11 plus a 4-inch howitzer.
See, I reckon I could bring my list down to like 900, and is that enough? No? I'd bring it down
900
to
would give you 350 points.
Oh, I could bring it down to 800, no problem.
It's got a real rocket motor, I've never looked at this before. Treat it as a heavy howitzer, cannot fire long range. Okay. We roll all dice that fail to score damage from the blast.
Yeah.
What?
So if you do the blast, and it doesn't damage anything, then you get to roll the ones that didn't damage. And it also does 4d6 hits on targets and 6 goals.
So you hit a house, you get 4d6 to bring the house down? To score 10?
Basically, they fire that building goes down. End of story.
It's probably slow.
What about an elephant?
Oh, what's that? Oh, is that the...
610 points.
Is that a Ferdinand? But...
Oh, they got Ferdinand's there, but... It's slow and unreliable.
Yeah, they were notoriously absolutely terrible.
Yeah. Could be funny though.
Could be hilarious. Anyway, now that we've fixed your list, what about the game of Boat Action?
I'm definitely going to add some sort of German tank because F their 14-year-old limit.
So, we were talking about Britain and than the UK, and that there was a lot more, there seemed to be more events going on, and that we were starting to travel a bit more. So, do you think there's a bit of an upsurge in Boat Action coming?
Yeah.
To be fair, the more competitive element is still playing for fun.
Yeah.
I mean, even somebody like let's say Brian, who's playing hard lists, is still playing for fun. We're not trying to.
If I was playing against
suck the joy out of it for anybody.
If I was playing against somebody that's not playing a lot of games, I'll help them through their games. I'll give them advice. Do you really want to do that? Because I'm going to do this for that if you do that type thing. So
I do that. If someone does something which I don't think they notice, I say, are you sure you want to do that?
Exactly.
If I ever tell you in a game, are you sure you want to do that, it means I've noticed something.
I'd like to think that although I play hard less, I'm not a dick with it, if you get my drift.
Yeah, matter of opinion.
Okay, it depends who I'm playing. If I'm playing any of you guys, screw you.
But I think Boat Action has still retained that friendly element, even for the more competitive players.
Absolutely. Yeah.
At least that's how I feel it is. I mean, we all have those odd games where you play against somebody and you guys just don't click or whatever, and you come away thinking, ah! But in general, 99 out of 100 games are good fun, and
I like to see a bit more creativity. Or maybe I just don't notice it.
When you say creativity, in what or anything in particular?
So you see so much Flektarn, you see so much of, like, you get green Africa Corps. No one does anything unhistorical and weird. I feel like I try and do that as much as I can. So Austrians is weird. No, yeah, I like
your Austrians. Your allied Austrians with the German route definitely makes people think twice.
Yeah,
what the hell is going
on? Maybe I'm just bored of drab.
Well, I was the only guy who took an LRDG list in Nottingham. And the amount of folk that got annoyed at my list was unreal. Just because my list can go, bye-bye, see you later, when you're shooting at me.
Well, since you're talking about things as well, so it goes to that tournament today, there's 16 pairs, so 32 players. There's 5 of us playing French. When have you ever seen that before?
That's true. There's only one of us playing Dutch.
Well, exactly, but nobody else is silly enough.
recruit.
In all fairness, well, you're right. It's just not an army that's come through. I think French hasn't always been played by a lot of people. We're just like seeing it for a wee bit now. The speaking people playing Italian lists and everything again. And
well, Italians have got some new rules in exactly. The Western Desert Book.
Yeah, totally. So, I think Western Desert Book you've got to watch though, because there is a bit of creep in there.
I was surprised more people weren't playing LRDG. I thought everyone was going to jump on the whole runaway.
I thought somebody was playing an SAS LRDG list. Was it? No, apart from you.
I don't know. I did see a couple of other British lists. I don't think it was an SAS list.
Oh, somebody played a... Because we played against them, they played a airborne Jeep list. Which, fortunately for us...
It was a Market Garden list. It was quite cool.
Yeah. It was cool. Unfortunately, we pulled the wrong scenario for them to do well with it.
Again, that was interesting because I've never played against that type of army. None of us up where we are actually playing in the Market Garden list and stuff, so there's opportunity in there.
I think there is, and I'm a big fan of the Double Sniper, and there's a few lists that have got the Double Sniper in the Market Garden books.
Yeah. You know what, I'm one of these people, and you know yourself, Paul, because you are my dealer. as soon as a book comes out, I have to have it.
Yeah.
But out of every bolt action book that I own, because I have them all, I've not read half of them. They sit on my shelf and look sweet. So maybe it's time for me to sit down. That could be my late New Year's resolution, to sit down and look through the books.
Well, Fortress Budapest has hit the shelves for pre-order. So what are we hoping from Fortress Budapest that's going to be different? You like this question, don't you, Brian?
All right, I want to see...
I'm putting you under pressure, mate.
I want to see Hungarian riverboat forces.
Hungarian riverboat?
Why?
I don't think you get Hungarian riverboat forces by the look I had on the website. There is quite a few specific lists.
So what have you seen on the website?
Just names of theatre lists, but I can't remember them off the top of my head. For Germany and Romania. Not Germany, Romania. Germany and Hungary. You have lists for them. I think you've got a couple of different lists for the Russians as well. I saw on their preview pre-order page and said what it was in the book. There's about 9 or 10 total at least. It'd
be interesting to see if what the new special rules for the theatre lists are.
Yeah.
Because now just about every book's coming out with new rules for the theatre list, aren't they?
Yeah. There's always new units pops up in that as well. So it'll be nice to see some new units.
I think there is going to be quite a few new Hungarian units. Looks though you've got a Hungarian air.
So that'll be interesting coming up. And then we've got the D-Day book coming out.
How am I going to get all these books read before these come out?
I know. And then after that, I can't remember the name of it, but we've got a Pacific book coming out.
Something.
But that's for me in the UK, it's a kind of campaign I never even heard of. And when I saw there was a possibility of a book coming out in October about basically some battles that took part on two islands, I was like, why are we doing this campaign book? But guys are saying that it's a really important US campaign.
Yeah.
You know, so...
You've got to watch the Pacific, haven't you?
Oh, and I forgot, Korea's coming out.
Oh, yeah, you can just put in that.
I'm up for it.
No, it's after World War II.
Yeah, but so are all the cheesy Japanese lists. Oh, they're before World War II.
That's rich coming from somebody who's played a sea lion list that didn't even happen.
Oh, I love it.
You played Thailand, didn't you?
I never know, yeah.
Oh, wow. I want more sea lion lists.
I've got absolutely stacks here sitting in metal, which has not even been undercoated yet, which I will get around to in about 4 armies' time. But
I think... A weird idea.
Oh, a weird idea. We like that.
So in the Gaigan book, there's an IRA list.
Yeah.
I want to do an IRA list. This is with the smocks. But I'm going to do it in 1940s, but with the theme of the 80s. So balaclavas, stuff like that.
That's just avoid beaten flesh.
Yeah. But I thought, you know, with the smocks, do you like the Germans? Say the Germans gave them some smocks, kind of that kind of style. I thought, that looks cool. It's kind of like
the rule of cool in wargaming, right?
The rule of cool.
If you've got the plastic miniatures, you can actually buy balaclava heads for the modern day miniatures. But you can do that way, but...
Or maybe something like aviators. I thought that'd be cool.
I suppose it does sit there and it sits on that border. Like, you know where some people can be offended by that thing.
When someone paints on a ghost...
I'm not offended by anything, don't get me wrong, but it's got that.
Yeah.
Because it's so recent. It's so recent, it's got the potential to upset people.
I feel like generally our community people don't really care.
No, you're right.
Not something you put on boltactionpainting.com or on Facebook, is it?
No. Again, we do have a lot of guys that are in the scene that are ex-military that have had to probably spend time on Northern Ireland, it could be a wee bit more contentious than the average that we would do.
Never thought about that. But I thought that.
See, the voice of reason, coming from me, that's
the thing. That's something cool to paint, I thought.
What about the Germans in black uniforms?
They just look cool.
As long as you put cobra symbols on them or red hand. Oh wait, there's no red hand.
Well, I don't have a problem with people painting swastikas. No, it's a game.
I don't have any.
It doesn't mean that people are Nazis because they play with SS armies.
I was thinking of Hydra there, sorry.
Hydra.
Cobra, I think that's G.I. Joe, right?
G.I. Joe,
What do you think in general about the more fantasy armies like G.I. Joe and all that kind of stuff? Are you cool with people playing those kind of armies? Or
I'm not a historical player, as I keep joking about, I'm a hysterical player.
You're definitely hysterical.
I would. If I was going to play that type of army, I would be playing Conflict, 47, or 45, 46, 40, whatever it's called. I didn't even play it. Conflict.
47.
47, there you go. I think World War II to me is World War II. So I like it to be greens and browns and all that sort of stuff. It doesn't have to be the right green, the right brown, the right camouflage. Just I kind of handle pink armies and blue armies in World War II.
Well,
it's a visual thing for me.
I'm happy playing anybody with anything. You can even play with grey plastic, as far as I'm concerned.
I've played with grey plastic before.
Now that you come to mention it, yeah, probably Conflict 47, if you're into that, is the more correct place to play about with that. But I wouldn't have a problem with it in bolt action if you want to play me with your Cobra army or...
Not saying I'd have a problem, I would play it. And I wouldn't pull the person up on it or anything like that. But I would just feel that it didn't have the same visual aspect of a World War II game that I would expect from a World War II game.
So that brings up an interesting question, for me at least, is... Do we play the hobby partly because it can be visually stimulating? Is that the right word?
Definitely.
I haven't really thought about that much before, but it's definitely nice to play on a pretty table with pretty models.
Painted models on a nice table with nice terrain.
Yeah.
It gives you the sense of something. Where if you're just sitting there in the air and it's a couple of books underneath the cloth, which we all started out with.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with it. It was just when you said about the visual thing, I thought, I never really thought about that being an aspect of the hobby, which obviously is when you think about it.
Yeah, I like to see the buildings, the bushes, the trees, everything like that. It's an all-encompassing thing for me. And I always like to paint my armies. And that's just me. If somebody comes with an unpainted army, I'm just as happy playing against them. But I feel more involved in the game or more drawn into the game if everything's just nice.
I couldn't put my finger on it, but it does seem better somehow.
I think there's also a difference between like a tabletop standard and like a nicely painted.
Absolutely. But tabletop standard, the three colours and a bit of basic.
I'm happy with that.
I'm more than happy playing against that. You know what I mean? You can tell what things are. It's got flesh on it, it's got some boots and webbing, and it's got a green uniform, right? It's fine. The next stage up for that is just throwing an ink wash over it anyway, you know what I mean? It's really, really doesn't bother me. As I say, if I was putting somebody that decided, no, I wanted to play a panther and paint it pink, I'd have a wee bit of a...
You'd go, oh, really?
The pink panther, are you joking me, right? And I would play against it. Right? I was waiting to use it. Honestly, that took about 5 minutes for the penny to drop on that before I...
But I'm thinking desert camouflage here, have panthers in the desert?
No,
but I think I might be getting a panther in the pink, just in with Brian now.
That's fine.
I have another idea. Do you remember the second Indiana Jones film?
Yep.
You know, like the guys with their red and black
things and Kali Ma, all that. That'd be a sweet army. That'd be an awesome army, I think.
Well, that brings up what was going to be my next question. So what do we feel about television-based armies? As in, you know, World War II television. Like you were saying, the Indiana Jones-based army.
Because Indiana Jones is roughly the right time period.
Yeah, exactly.
20s, 30s, right?
Yeah, it's got a theme to it. It still feels like it's the same types of uniforms. Like, you fire Africa Corps and have your commander sitting next to an arc, you know what I mean? It's got something different that... That's fine. I don't have an issue with it.
You've got folk with low armies and...
I ran the German games from Hollywood with the Hollywood Tiger Battalion. Yeah. And that was fun.
So how are we with, in general, with playing those armies now?
Again, I don't have an issue with them either. Because to me, it's still come from that theme of World War II. Mm. You know what I mean? So
there's something fun, something different to play. Hollywood Tigers, they've got the main gun, I think, plus 10 penetration. But they're a T-34 chassis, so 9 up armour. And as soon as you penetrate it with anything that has a penetration value, it's automatically 2 rolls on the damage chart. So they're easy to blow. Kill. So it's just, yeah, you take them for fun and you don't expect to win a tournament or come in the top 3. But I did that.
I was going to say, did you?
Yeah.
Because one of the ideas I like about Ball Action is painting individual models for me. And I'm starting to think about Stossie's Heroes models and things.
Yeah.
And Stossie has, some of his models are based on the television characters or even some well-known public figures.
Yep, totally. The thing about it though is you're going to see anyone who uses Stossie's figures for American paras, everyone was easy come to you.
That's just...
But they're really nice models.
But I mean, even Warlord has its own character models that you can use, you know.
So that's what they produced Hogan's Heroes characters not that long ago as well, is that Warlord?
No.
Hogan's Heroes, yes, it's Stossie. Stossie's got Hogan's Heroes.
Name as well. Right.
He's got the Colonel Klink and the Sergeant.
Yeah.
And he's got the Hogan as well.
Yeah. A lot of nice models out there. There's so much scope for people to do anything with their armies.
I don't see it very often though.
No.
I mean, like at this competition, what was the strangest thing, excluding myself?
Your weird.
You mean your army
Austrian.
Or yourself?
Both. And the army is probably Dutch, French, or your SAS. But they're both kind of pretty normal. They're all within.
Well,
the
yeah, you haven't seen Dutch, but you've seen Dutch because I've got them. But you don't really see Dutch. But
I mean, with the German goons, you've got to ask permission for to get to play them.
Yeah.
And it's, they die on tubes. They get no cover, and you end up walking away with hundreds of dead.
And did you bother painting that many models for that?
No, I have that many models for that.
Yeah, but you haven't painted them. That's what I'm saying.
No.
So I also can't be bothered getting cavalry because I don't want to buy double the amount of models.
Well, you don't buy double the amount of models because they come in the blisters.
Right, so you get the standard.
Oh, you're still paying for them. You get three horses with three riders and three foot guys.
And the painting as well.
But what happened there with me that last couple of weeks was, well, I obviously painted my entire French army for coming down to me in the last 2-3 weeks. So there was 24 cavalry, so I had to paint 24 dismounted guys. That I even forgot I had with me because I've never dismounted the guys in my puff. So,
do they fire the rifles as carbines or rifles?
When they're on horses, they fire as pistols.
Yeah.
And then when they're on foot, they fire as rifles. And then when they assault, because they're pistols and they're on horseback, they count as tough fighters.
Ah, so you're using them to assault?
I was using them to assault as tough fighters. Right? But I've not dismounted them in about 4 or 5 games that I've actually played with them. That's including the 3 games I played today. So, that's all good.
Oh, I still think Cold War, Team Yankee Ball Action would be cool. I've heard, are there rumours? There's always rumours of Vietnam, isn't there?
Who knows? What's up the road?
There's homebrewed Vietnam rules kicking
around. Yeah, there is already homebrewed.
But it's like Vietnam feels too far, too different.
Well, like, things like Moro Conflict's too different, I think, too.
Well, you take something like the Arab War, and most of their vehicles are all Second World War vehicles.
Yeah.
Same in Korea, just...
Yeah. I think Korea works, but when you start introducing, like, assault rifles on a large scale, then it's like, well, alright.
Vietnam, it just means that instead of using rifles, every single model would have assault rifles.
But we've got the rules for them already, so it's not changing the rules.
So it's not changing much. Well, you'd have to add in RPGs and helicopters.
I think with...
you've got to start looking at the force listing and how to balance the forces.
With Vietnam, you have to start adding things like the tunnel fighters and different things where they can actually pop out of the vehicle, so that would be more terrain orientated.
It's quite quick painting the whole army of guys in black pyjamas, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, what are we up to there? We're up to about 40 minutes, so probably time to put any listeners out of their misery or wake them up. So we'll leave it there, guys. Next podcast will be out on Friday. Not quite sure what we're talking about yet, but hopefully we'll see you then. And from Brian, Graham and Harrison and myself, mahalo for now.
So, you listen to the show. Now it's time to visit thewarhq.co.uk for all your bolt action needs. And remember to use the code POD21, that's POD21, to get 20% off and free postage and packaging. See you on the next show.